Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A series of storms has given the Sierra a boost of snow, allowing ski resorts to open and, more importantly, giving a base to the snowpack. But along with the snow, we got a good soaking rain this weekend from north to south, east to west. Our parched state saw some decent rain totals, which is all typical for this time of year. But as we all know, it needs to continue. We just need to go back to last year when we had a great start to the season, plus a nice blast around Christmas, New Year's, and then the faucet just kind of shut off, leaving us with a dry January and marginal spring. So to put all of this into perspective, we've invited KCRA3 Chief Meteorologist Mark Finan back to Insight. Good morning, Mark.
And good morning, Vicky. How are you doing today?
Oh, doing great. Looking forward to having, you know, maybe a break from some wet weather, but also always grateful to have some wet weather, especially in California. Before we get into the rain and snow totals over the last, you know, 7 days or so, can you put this time of year in Northern California into context?
Well, you know, November, even October, November is when we're just kind of getting into the rain season. And we really can't read too much into what we do or don't see in October. November is a bit more telling, and November is kind of a month that we depend on, but it isn't one of the big rain makers. So ending the month of November with below average precipitation, well, not ideal, it isn't worth raising big alarms for. But as you get into December, January, February, March, those are really big months. And so far, these first 5 days of December certainly have been very good. But yeah, it's, as you mentioned, it's nice to have what we have, but we have to keep it going.
Yeah, it's kind of like a drop in the bucket. But it did seem like once like the calendar hit December 1st, we ended up getting some, you know, much needed precipitation. How did we do rain wise?
Well, in Sacramento, we had a little under 3 inches of rain over the course of those few days. And, you know, that's just terrific. And in the Sierra, we had a couple of feet of snow on Thursday. We had another 20 inches over the course of the weekend. It was a higher snow level over the weekend, so more water than snow. But on the west slope of the Sierra, there were some areas that saw up to 4 inches of rain over the last, especially on Saturday. So, yeah, this has been terrific. And what it's done is it's kind of rejuvenated some of the streams and creeks on the west slope. So now we have water flowing. And that's great. You know, when we start getting some rain in November, we saw some nice rain in the early part of November back around Election Day, and that's some nice snow too. But those early season rains just kind of soak into the ground. They don't do much for runoff. So now, after the rain we've had Saturday and continue to get here and there, we are now starting to see, well, like Folsom Lake, for instance, is up a couple of feet. So it does that downhill slide all the way into the early fall and mid-fall. And then at this time of year, we start getting some rain and Folsom Lake can start filling up again. That's just one small example, but we need to start seeing that on places like Shasta and Oroville and continue a gradual fill on those big reservoirs as we go through the next 4 or 5 months.
What are the status of the reservoirs now?
Yeah, it isn't good. They're quite low, you know, but this is the time of year when they are at their lowest. But they are, I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but they are not quite at historic lows, but they are quite, quite low. And it would take a year of about 130 to 150% of average precipitation above Shasta and above Oroville to have those be full by the time we get to the month of May. I do know that the Department of Water Resources is well aware of where they are and that any rain that we get will be held, and they'll be managing that water as they have been having to over the last couple of years. But yeah, we need a lot of this above the reservoirs to fill those by the time we get to the end of the year. You know, and it's interesting, Vicky, while we had good rain in Sacramento and we're at something like 130% of average for this state, there's something called the 8-station index that the Department of Water Resources and others use. It's an index made up of 8 sites that go from roughly Blue Canyon up toward the Shasta area. So it covers all of that watershed of the Sacramento River and part of the American River and Feather River. And so it's an index that they put together to monitor how much water is going to be able to come down into those. And that index is still below average. For this time of year. Not by much, but while many other areas like the snowpack in the central Sierra and northern Sierra is generally slightly above average, that eight station index is still slightly below average. And that's a key factor into what will eventually go into Oroville and Shasta.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like a whole network of systems that we rely on for water supply. When we go up into the higher elevations, we were talking about rain, but what were snow totals over the weekend?
So the Central Sierra Snow Lab, which is up at Soda Springs, they measured 20 inches of snow, and they're right under 7,000 feet. So for a while, especially on Saturday, they'd have rain and then snow and then rain and then snow. So that's like what kept the snow totals down, whereas what we had on Thursday was all snow, and that's how we got 3 feet of snow plus in many areas, and it was terrific. But because this weekend, especially Saturday, was a little bit warmer, that kept those totals down. So if you just look at the raw numbers, 20 inches of snow is pretty modest for a good Sierra storm, but there is a lot of water locked into that because of the rain snow mix. Now, if you go above 8,000 feet, the top of the resorts, they did quite a bit better with 3 feet plus.
Overall, would you say that this was a warmer system than was forecasted?
We knew that the snow levels were going to come up. The one thing that we didn't anticipate, because the models were all over the place last week, was just how wet it was going to be. We thought that we might be able to get 3/4 of an inch to an inch of rain on Saturday, and we saw 1.75 inches. So it was quite a bit wetter. And what was interesting was that we finally got what we call an atmospheric river. It wasn't a great atmospheric river, but we finally got one. And those are the types of systems that we need from time to time throughout the year. What we have seen here and there is you get 1/4 of an inch of rain, maybe 1/2 inch of rain from a relatively modest system that goes by. Those are fine, but you need, let's see, if you have 1/2 inch of rain from one storm, you need 40 of those to get an average year.
So way to put it into context.
Yeah. So what you need are these atmospheric river storms from time to time, one or two a month over the next few months, that can provide you 1 inch, 2 inches of rain, 3 inches of rain on some of the extreme, more extreme examples. So we finally did get an atmospheric river sort of tap during the during Saturday, especially, and that's what's so beneficial. So a really beneficial rain on Saturday. And that's the sort of system that we'll need to see more of. Unfortunately, that what we saw quite often in November were systems that dropped down from the north, very little moisture with them. And even if they did bring us anything in the way of rain, it was less than 1/10 of an inch of rain. So yeah, Saturday's was different. It was wetter and it was terrific.
Yeah, it was. And we don't even have to go that far into the past. You know, we just go to last year where, you know, we started off with what felt like, you know, a pretty robust or decent wet season. And then it kind of was like the faucet turned off. You know, can you remind us what happened just last January, less than a year ago?
Yeah, so December was gangbusters. We were doing terrific last December. The ski areas were doing quite well. So we were having storm after storm. We even had some creek flooding in Sacramento County. It was that sort of thing. And then we got to the end of December, beginning of January, and we got into a lull. Now, it's interesting because every year we get a lull, I should say, almost every year. It may happen in January, February, sometime around 3 weeks. We'll, you know, might average 20 days, 30 days, something like that, where we get very little rain. And then the pattern switches again. So if that happens again sometime, let's say we go from Christmas to the middle part of January without anything in the way of rain, that's rather common. However, as a meteorologist, I always get afraid that the faucet isn't going to get turned back on again. So when we go through those, I'm always reminded of the fact that we do go through these lulls that are quite common for and on the average of about 3 weeks. But again, for me, I always like to at least have some rain on the 7-day forecast just to make me feel better.
Yeah. And also we don't have to go that far back either. You know, just a few years ago, this time in December 2017, you had the Thomas Fire, which was in December. But now we have, you know, a decent system that moved through our area over the last 7 days or so. Would you say that we can officially or unofficially declare wild season over with, especially when we talk about wildfire season as being year round?
Yes. We are not going to see any large fires, until, next spring. There will be small incidents that will happen here and there, but a key component here is when CAL FIRE themselves are doing prescribed burns, you know things are going to be pretty safe. And we've been seeing a lot of those not only in the Tahoe Basin, but down on the West Slope. So if they're comfortable in setting fires, then we should be feel safe that the fire season is over. But CAL FIRE does respond to incidents year round. But in terms of the kind of incidents that we worry about in our fire season, especially August, September, and October, those scale of fires, that type of fire, yeah, that's in our rearview mirror for this year anyway.
I'm just curious, Mark, given that you have like more than 30 years of covering and forecasting weather, specifically in Northern California, you came to KCRA in 1991. Are the fundamentals still the same? Or in what ways has your job changed?
My job has gotten somewhat easier, but also in some ways somewhat harder. The technology in terms of our forecast models is so much better than it was 30 years ago. 30 years ago, at KCRA, we did a 5-day forecast, and I always felt kind of iffy about day five. Now we do a 7-day forecast, and while I feel a little iffy about day seven, those first 4 or 5 days usually are pretty solid, and people can make plans off of those. So the modeling and the technology is getting so much better, and it's been a joy for me in my career to see the progress and also to see where it's going and how much better things are going to get from what we have now. But the way it makes it somewhat more difficult is because forecasting is getting better, the public's expectations are also higher. So, well, when I started doing meteorology back in the early 80s, we only did a 72-hour forecast. And so forecasting a snowstorm, more than 2 days out was a little on the extreme side. So giving people anything that they could plan on was very, very difficult. But then again, they didn't expect to know what the weekend was going to be like on Monday.
Well, as always, Mark, thank you so much for the perspective.
You're quite welcome.
Mark Finan is KCRA's chief meteorologist. You're listening to Insight here on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Schlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. If you thought we had a less severe wildfire season this year, you'd be correct. According to CAL FIRE, as of this morning, 362,000 acres have burned so far this year. That is just a fraction of the 2.5 million acres from last year and over 4 million acres burned in 2020. That's a pretty significant decrease. But why? Our fire season is basically year-round. Our summers are hotter, our winters are unpredictable, and the weather is getting more extreme. All the while, the push to combat or curtail climate change continues, as much of the world, not all, but much of the world, works on new agreements, laws, regulations, and incentives to get consumers and industries off carbon-fueled energy and into greener habitats. To help us understand is Michael Wara, senior research scholar at the Stanford Woods Institute for the Environment. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for having me, Vicki.
So before we get started, just for context, can you explain what you do at Stanford?
Sure. I run a program that uses and educates our graduate students by sort of putting them to work, working on real policy problems, doing analysis, and providing high quality insight for policymakers, and also in service of kind of underserved stakeholders, environmental justice advocates, tribes, folks like that in the sustainability process.
You're also a part of consulting and collaborating with policymakers, you know, about crafting new laws, rules and regulations as they relate to climate change. What are some of the big challenges that you face here in California?
Well, I think the two big ones we face really are reducing our impact on climate change, right? Figuring out a way to be a prosperous, growing society while we don't destroy the planet. And at the same time, adapting to the changes that are coming at us, especially in terms of our water supply and wildfire.
Yeah. You touched upon equity as part of your mission, and you were quoted in the Stanford Daily that in terms of finding solutions, you know, to combat climate change, it needs to be accessible for all, right? You need to create solutions that create abundance and create affordability, but you also caution that that's the challenge. Can you unpack that for us? What is challenging about making solutions towards climate change equitable for everybody?
Well, I think the, you know, the reality is in California, you know, many, many people, probably most people, are struggling just to get by. And they want a better life for their kids and for themselves and greater security. And the solutions that we craft to deal with carbon dioxide emissions and other emissions of greenhouse gases have to make that situation better, not worse. And that would sort of be the benchmark that I have, is we actually need to, by solving climate change, make regular people's lives better than they are now. And that can be hard because new technologies, you know, when they're brand new, are expensive, right? Like electric vehicles are more expensive than regular cars, internal combustion engine vehicles today. That situation is evolving rapidly, though. And what California can do is help to put these new kinds of technologies into the hands affordably of the people in California that have low income for various reasons and maybe are struggling to afford the cost of housing and all the other costs of living around here.
California sets ambitious goals when it comes to climate change, and that is obviously consistent in the last legislative sessions, even with new laws. But there was this new legislation that was passed to bring the state to net zero carbon emissions by 2035. That's not really that far away. It's right around the corner. Do you think that we can actually reach that goal? Is that realistic? And if so, why and how?
Well, it's easy to get these targets a little bit confused. Net zero by 2045 is, I believe, the goal, which gives us an extra 10 years, which is good. Depending on your perspective,
I suppose. Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think we're going to need it is the reality. The goals that California has set are incredibly ambitious. And, you know, they really are, you know, at the forefront of kind of global thinking about this. But I'd emphasize, you know, the targets and the timetables are really important. The real challenge for California in the next few years is going to be implementing, right? Actually doing things in the world, building new kinds of power plants that don't pollute the air, shutting down the ones that do pollute the air, especially in environmental justice communities. And, you know, forging, you know, kind of doing the hard work of implementation, which in California in particular is challenging, right? We all know it's hard to build housing here. It's hard to build lots of things here. But what we need to do for the energy transition is basically rebuild lots of our energy infrastructure. Not all of it, but a lot of it.
When it comes to the federal arm, the Federal Inflation Act, which was recently signed by President Biden, there is some funding attached, right, to fund clean energy goals. How will this benefit California?
It makes everything cheaper that we need to do. And that is incredibly significant. The inflation reduction, well, the infrastructure framework legislation funded demonstration projects, which, you know, some of which may happen in California. I hope that they do. And then the Inflation Reduction Act followed that by locking in tax credits for a number of the key technologies. You know, I'll just mention one of them. This summer, we had a close call with the grid. Many people remember the heat wave and how, you know, that you were getting a text message to turn down your air conditioning and all this. You know, we squeaked by in that situation, largely because we've deployed a lot of energy storage in the state of California over the last couple of years, since the last time we had a big heat wave and the grid was really stressed. And the Inflation Reduction Act, for the first time, creates a standalone tax credit for deploying that kind of battery storage. And that's going to make it cheaper across the board. It's going to make it easier for California to keep doing what it has been doing under the Newsom administration and just putting batteries out in the world so that they are there when we need them, right? We have to deploy this new technology before we shut down the old stuff or we get into trouble, right? And that's exactly what we're doing in California. And we just need to keep doing it for the next, you know, for the duration, really.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about climate change for decades. Do you think that there has been a significant shift in really the political will to do something about it in recent years?
I do. You know, as I look at the November election, you know, one of the things that's really striking to me is that if I've been doing this stuff for a while, since the early 2000s, and, you know, back then, Senator Manchin made a campaign ad shooting the climate bill with an AR-15. And that was a good campaign ad for him. This year, Congress passed historic climate legislation, and it was a non-issue in the election, right? There's no Republican saying, we need to repeal that, like Republicans made a career out of saying about the Affordable Care Act. And I think that really shows how the conversation has shifted. Everybody is experiencing these climate impacts. And that means that we're not maybe doing the things that I would like to do, many of the more progressive side of the aisle might prefer, but we're doing things and they're big and we need to keep doing them. And I think the situation will improve.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and we're speaking with Michael Wara, senior research scholar at Stanford's Woods Institute for the Environment. So we had some decent systems move through our area over the last, you know, several days, and there's a nice base of snowpack in portions of the Sierra. That also has us talking about wildfire season. I mean, it was just a fraction of acres burned when you look at just 2021 back to 2020. Is there something that you can pinpoint that you think helped curtail and curb this year's number of acres burned?
Yeah, actually, it's quite clear what did. You know, we were headed into the dangerous part of the season. You know, if folks think back to when the Napa-Sonoma fires and the Camp Fire and the big fires the last few years in Southern California occurred, it was mid to late fall. And in mid-September, as there was a very dangerous fire burning in the Sierra, the Mosquito Fire, we got a big rainstorm that basically ended the fire season in the Sierra. And then, the fuels reduced the fire risk in the Bay Area, which is also a really vulnerable place. And so, you know, we had some good luck this year. And, you know, we also worked to make our luck as a state. We've been spending really unprecedented amounts of money trying to reduce fire risk. But for that effort to really pay off, we're going to need to sustain it for the better part of a decade, probably. And so we're really in the beginning phase. And I think we're not at the place yet where our investments really fully protect us from fire. We're doing the right things. And that's a huge step forward, really doing the right things at the right scale for the first time ever, perhaps. But it takes time because there's so much backlog of work to do to create fire resilient communities. And so it's great that we had some luck this year. We sure deserved it after the bad luck that we've had for the last 7 years. So, but I think we should not, at least let me put it differently. I don't count my chickens. I don't think we are safe or resilient yet. And we should pat ourselves on the back, and in particular, the state of California, the governor and the legislature should pat themselves on the back for all the work they've done to provide resources so that we could make a big start on fire risk in the state. But we have a long ways to go.
Yeah. And when you're talking about investment, I mean, and also just kind of the growing pains with like really investing an unprecedented amount of money into forest management, you know, one of the realities is that, and you were part of a story that Cap Radio Scott Rudd did a few months back, and this is the component of the National Forest Service, particularly in the Caldor fire in El Dorado County. I mean, they had a mitigation plan that was created years ago, upwards of two decades ago, but it fell short of completion, and it possibly could have avoided or reduced the destruction of the Caldor fire, particularly in the community of Grizzly Flats, which was largely destroyed. I mean, this is just one of many high fire threat communities across the state and more broadly the West. Is there a bigger lesson or takeaway beyond what happened in the Caldor fire?
Well, you know, I view the reporting that you did and that the Cap Radio did, Scott Rodd did, is kind of like, it's almost, it reads to me like a tragedy, in the sense that everyone knew kind of what was going to happen, and still they could not prevent it. And you know, ironically, just this fall, the Forest Service was finally doing prescribed fire in the Grizzly Flats area. I noticed that on the prescribed fire maps that are put up every day. And, you know, I just wish that that could have happened 2 years ago, you know, and before this fire. I think on the federal side, right, so it's important for listeners to remember that the Forest Service in particular owns about 45-ish% of the forest land in California. So it plays a really important role in what happens in terms of fire policy. And there are some big opportunities coming up this year that I think the California delegation is going to focus on to make that situation better. In particular, the Farm Bill is up for reauthorization. And you might not think of the Forest Service as belonging to like the farming part of the government, but, you know, the Forest Service is part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and that means the rules that determine how spending happens and what programs exist within the Forest Service are part of the Farm Bill. So I think the California delegation and the Western delegation in Congress is going to be really focused on trying to create better programs through the Farm Bill to help California and the West do better on fire. And that's a really important opportunity.
You know, finally, as I asked you about climate change and there being a shift potentially in the political will, it seems like that's the case as well when it comes to wildfires and forest management, shifting from a culture that historically has been fire suppression to actually reintroducing good fire back into the landscape.
Yeah, I think, so one thing to say is one of the things that's really interesting to me and unique about wildfire policy is it really is pretty bipartisan. Most of the legislation that I've provided assistance on over the last several years in California has passed by wide bipartisan majorities. That doesn't usually happen on issues related to anything having to do with natural resources or the environment. Similarly, in Congress, I think there's a lot of opportunity to work across the aisle on this issue and really craft constructive, productive solutions. And, you know, that's because everybody cares, right? It doesn't matter if you're in a red area with trees or a blue area with trees. If your town burns down, it's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And so I think everybody is really rolling up their sleeves to find productive solutions. That being said, I think it's really important not to forget what happened in New Mexico this year. Right. So we did not have a bad fire season in California, but in New Mexico, it was one of the worst fire seasons ever. And one of the worst the largest wildfire in New Mexico history, it was incredibly disruptive, was started by a prescribed fire and it was not fully extinguished and then kind of blew up months later and caused this fire. And I think there are positives and negatives pushing toward kind of better management of our forests. The reality is, especially given climate change, we are going to need to learn to live with fire. And that means we have to choose the fire we want to have and not let nature choose it for us, because nature's not going to do us any favors.
Michael Warr is a senior research scholar at Stanford's Woods Institute for the Environment. Thank you so much for the time, Michael.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The holidays can be a time for cheer for some, but this time of year can also just be a difficult time. It can also be very stressful, especially for those navigating mental health, which can trigger the feeling of the holiday blues. We're going to have some important conversations with those sharing their personal experience, coupled with advice and resources about navigating the holidays with self-care. Sarah Marikis is an executive director for Adverse Childhood Experiences Resource Network, also called ACE for short, which offers trauma-informed care to individuals and more broadly, the community. We're also joined by Nefertiti Kemet Gajayi, a licensed clinical social worker with Stop Stigma SAC, as well as Sacramentan Mike McCarthy, who lives with mental illness and shares his story to stop stigma and discrimination. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
And taking the time. Mike, I want to start with you. Can you just talk to us about your experience with Stop Stigma Sacramento, the nonprofit, and how you became involved?
Great. Thank you. I've been with that 6 years. I've been on what's called the Speakers Bureau, and I go out into the community with two other people, and we each tell our story. It's about 5, 6, 7 minutes, and it's something that I probably learn more by being there with everyone else. Mm-hmm. So I've really enjoyed it, and it's been very healthy for me.
How are the holidays this time of year, especially since not only for yourself personally, but being part of the Speakers Bureau with Stop Stigma Sacramento, what conversations come up during this time?
Well, I can only speak from my experience, and the holidays are tough because the normal things that everyone worries about, getting the right gift, staying within budget, being around family, those are there, and they're heightened at this time of the year. With respect to Stop Stigma, unfortunately, we haven't been able to go back into the schools, the corporations, the different people that we've served over the years. We miss it.
Mm-hmm. What would you like family and loved ones to keep in mind during the holidays?
You know, I think that we all have to communicate as best as we can. And that may be saying, hey, I'm not comfortable right now, or could you tell me how you're doing? And it's a two-way street, both for the family, because this is really a we thing. It's not just my mental illness, but it's a family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Nefertiti, you're a licensed clinical social worker with Stop Stigma Sacramento. I guess, is there a trend this time of year? What kind of, in terms of the number of people that are reaching out for support and resources during the holidays?
So I just wanted to clarify a little bit. I am a licensed clinical social worker, but I volunteer with Stop Stigma. Uh-huh. Yeah. So my role as a licensed clinical social worker is just a little different than my role here at Stop Stigma.
Why is it important for you to volunteer?
It is so important to volunteer because this is so important to my heart. This is part of who I am, and it's important to not only be a person with mental illness working in the field, but also to support those who are struggling, to let them know that it's okay.
You know, from that personal perspective, you know, how do you navigate seasonal or holiday blues?
My thing is just really taking care of myself, really communicating with my family members, and keeping in contact with those people that, you know, love and care for me. I also look out for warning signs, trying to manage those things before they come up too hard, right? Mm-hmm. And so just really looking out for the warning signs is something that I want other people to know about as well.
And Mike, I see you nodding. I mean, like noticing those warning signs. I mean, I imagine you have personal experience with that as well.
Absolutely. I can't say it enough. It's really important to try. I try to stay in my routines. I try to make sure that I'm checking myself and going, hey, am I okay right now? Do I feel safe? Am I, you know, doing the things that are helpful to me? Those routines are things like medications and counseling and staying on track with things like doing housework, mm-hmm. doing the laundry, dumb things like that, but they really help me a lot.
Yeah, they can be invaluable. Nefertiti, what do you think is missing from the conversation when talking about mental health and certain times of the year? You know, particularly right now, we're talking about mental health in context of, you know, the holiday season.
Everybody has mental health.
Yeah.
And if you're sick, even if you don't know what it is, you go to a doctor. And so just like with physical health, when you have a mental health concern, you go to a social worker, a psychologist, a psychiatrist to get that extra support. And it doesn't always mean medications.
When it comes to barriers, I would imagine stigma plays a big role in actually helping yourself with mental health, because we all go through those periods in our life. But unlike maybe, you sprain an ankle or you have a physical injury, you don't necessarily think of seeking out the support or resources. Is that changing now as we're having a bigger conversation about mental health as a community and as a society?
I think it is changing. I think with COVID-19, it has increased a lot of the services that are out there for people with mental health concerns. And I think that it's a way bigger conversation that we're having now, because so many more people are having issues with anxiety specifically.
When it comes to, you know, navigating this time or even any difficult time with self-care, what advice do you have to offer someone that needs help knowing how to navigate difficult times with self-care at front of mind?
Just being supportive of others can be really helpful. Getting out of your own space, getting out of the house can be a really big deal around this time right now as well. Taking nice walks, getting a breath of fresh air, and just really reaching out to a friend as well.
Sarah, that brings me to you. You're with the Adverse Childhood Experiences Resource Network. It's the ACE Resource Network. And y'all just kicked off a campaign called Holidays Are Hard, and you're wrapping around that campaign with resources and support and event. I mean, what are some of the ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences that individuals face, particularly when talking about the holidays and that they can be tough?
Yeah, thank you, Vicki. At the ACE Resource Network, we're working to increase awareness of adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, and toxic stress. And those include stressful, potentially traumatic events or circumstances that can happen to us as kids. This includes things like abuse or neglect, or having a parent or caregiver incarcerated when we're a kid. And like both Nefertiti and Mike have talked about, the holidays can be hard, and the holidays can be especially hard for people who've experienced difficult childhoods. It can bring up memories of past traumas or triggers. It may, as our routines are thrown off and sort of the busyness of the season distracts us, it can bring up, we can not feel well. It can bring up chronic pain and illness. And so what we're doing this holiday season is spreading that message, this simple truth that for many of us, the holidays are hard. And what we hope to do through that is to affirm and validate how people may be feeling. And we believe that it's an incredible first step to create a sense of safety that we can talk about some of these hard things, to reduce stigma. You know, in the dark, things can fester, and we want to shine a light on these issues that often aren't talked about, because we believe creating that place of safety and normalcy is a way that we can heal and grow. And to help people through the holiday season, we're doing a couple of things. First, what we're doing is we're providing tips and tools for people at numberstory.org/holidays that can help people navigate the holiday season. And some examples were just given about how we can communicate, we can set boundaries, we can check in with ourselves, we can create that support system ahead of a potentially really stressful situation. And so if you know the holidays aren't feeling so merry or bright for you, or if your light feels dim, or if navigating relationships are stressful, or if you're feeling lonely, or if family isn't welcoming, we're offering tips and tools on how to navigate that at numberstory.org/holidays. And a lot of these things are rooted in our childhoods. And what we're also doing in the community throughout Sacramento is providing resources and lifting up great groups in Sacramento that are providing support and healing resources, particularly for people with mental health challenges. And then at the end of the month, we're hosting a Found Family Festival on December 18th from 4 to 8 p.m. in Lavender Heights. And the Found Family Festival is a free community celebration that we believe is an antidote to the holidays are hard. We know that healing does not happen in isolation. It happens in community. And so we encourage listeners to come out on December 18th. We'll have some great musical performances by Jake Wesley Rogers and Betty Who. We'll have food, and believe that coming together in community, reducing isolation, can help people make the holidays a little less hard.
I would imagine, Sarah, that by having these events during the holiday season, you really see the value in gathering with other people to reduce that feeling of isolation and to help ease, you know, whatever someone is going through and navigating during this time of year.
Absolutely. And that's why we wanted to create a place and space for people to do that during the holidays. Not only the holidays are hard, they're busy for many of us. We may be traveling. We may not want to travel. We may not be traveling and feel lonely. And so one of the things that we're doing in Lavender Heights, we have a beautiful strawberry tree. We call it the number story tree, where we're inviting people to come out all month long and take a moment to reflect on their strength and their resilience that have gotten them where they are today. And we invite you to come out by yourself or with a loved one, to interact with the tree and give yourself the space to sort of acknowledge the strength and resilience that you do hold. And for those of your listeners who are not in the area, can also access the tree again at numberstory.org/holidays to take that moment, to find a moment of calm, of reflection, as we navigate what is often a difficult season for many of us.
Yeah. Finally, in the last minute or two that we have, you know, I'd love to end with some parting advice, because I think we all try to find the right balance of like expectation versus what we actually want to do during the holidays, right? And sometimes, you know, you don't really want to gather, but you feel like you need to, that the expectation is there from friends or loved ones. What advice do you have for people that are struggling to find that right balance? Nefertiti, I'll start with you.
Okay. So just really taking the time to, you know, eat and drink in moderation, right? And taking care of yourself in, you know, getting some exercise in, setting reasonable goals and expectations for holiday activities, and sometimes just communicating that you need to take a time out. You know, a safe break away from family and friends can sometimes be helpful. Sometimes we thrive in communities, but sometimes we need a little isolation just to, you know, be able to handle the stress of being around a lot of people.
Yeah, hit the reset button.
Hit
you
the
know,
reset
decompress
button.
Decompress a little bit, you know, because it's such a busy and can be really overactive and overstimulating time. Mike, I want to end with you.
Oh, thank you. I just want to express my gratefulness to my family or people that I get in touch with this time of the year. I just feel very, very blessed that I get to participate with them, and that helps me deal with my mental illnesses.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us. It's such an important topic that isn't talked about enough.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah Murikis is the Executive Director of Adverse Childhood Experiences Resource Network, also called ACE for short, which offers trauma-informed care to individuals and more broadly the community. We have a link to the events that they have scheduled throughout December. We're also joined by Nefertiti Kemet Gajayi, a licensed clinical social worker and a volunteer with the organization Stop Stigma Sacramento, as well as Sacramentan Mike McCarthy. And with that, that is Insight for today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us at insight@capradio.org. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.